C1AP, number 15B.
So, Mrs. Eddy says here, give them a cup of cold water in Christ's name and never fear the consequences. You see, she knew something about love, that the nature of love is that you are never fearing the consequences. It is like that, so she depicts that Gethsemane, which Mrs. Eddy defines as love, meeting no response, but still remaining love. Give a cup of cold water. Don't ask if that is received well or if they kick back. Don't ask that. Just stay at that altitude of the woman which can love without finding a response and still remaining love. That's a great quality of a woman. So if we can't have that, if we have a trading God who says, I give you something in all my love, but you have to give me back the equal, that is not love. That is a trading God of the Old Testament. I give you so much and you have to give me back so much. Love gives without recompense, without demanding a recompense, without asking or awaiting a recompense. It gives because it cannot help giving. Just as we use mathematics or arithmetic, we calculate because it's right and not because we get something back, because it's right within itself. It's an attitude which is right within itself. And again, Mrs. Eddy brings up the fear that something could go wrong. What if the old dragon should send forth a new flood to drown the Christ idea? That question which she has had in her mind until the last day. Until the last day. She was not always quite sure if her discovery will stand the test of history, if it will not get lost again. That she didn't always quite know. And here, she is more definite. She has to be more definite. She cannot give a textbook where she leaves in some doubts. That's the way we all act. Within the quiet hours of struggle and woes and tribulation, we begin sometime to wonder, am I on the wrong track? Am I really on the right track? But then we gather really the power and our great strength and pull ourselves together and see what is right. And in that mood we are right. And not in those difficult hours through which we go sometimes, then we don't write. Then we know we are in the process of leavening thought, of overcoming and meeting fear and things like that. And so here she is very definite and gives a very confident sense of love that the idea will never be drowned again. But this is a dangerous statement for the reader, not for the writer. Why? She says, he can neither drown your voice with its roar, nor again sink the world into the deep waters of chaos and old night. In this age, she meant our century, in this age, the earth, now watch all those will help the woman, the spiritual idea will be understood, those ready for the blessing you impart will give thanks, the water will be pacified, and the Christ will command the wave. Can you see she gives really that sense of love, of forcible love, which says love can never be turned back, can never lose its high standard of perfection. The plan of love can never, turned backward?
Reversed.
Thank you. Can never be reversed. It will always go forward. But you also know that right before she left us, she was wondering if Christian Science will be understood, that it can only survive if it's understood. So this passage gives us the sense of the fundamental fact of the plan of love. But I said it's a dangerous statement for the reader, because the reader then reads this, perhaps especially in these times of trouble and incertitude, of world fear about the future, and then the student can say, oh, don't matter, you know, Mrs. Eddy prophesied that it will be all right, that the idea will fulfill itself and there is no danger. So that is dangerous. These ideas can only really be demonstrated as science and not as suffering if they are understood and if we really give to this idea our whole womanhood sense. So we cannot say, because Mrs. Eddy was so definite about the future that everything will be all right, that we can now put our hands into our lap and rest in apathy and await the issue of the future. That would be very, very dangerous. Then she turns to another aspect of womanhood. We still are wondering, what is it that prevents us, or prevents the woman, to be swallowed up by the dragon? What do we still have further to see that the woman is safe in the wilderness? So she takes up here in the side note, hidden ways of iniquity. Then the next side note is Christly warning. And you can see it's still saying you have to be watchful, you have to be discerning. Don't fall back into apathy, nor do you fall into indignation. The text reads like this on page 570-26. When God heals the sick or the sinning, they should, again we have a should, we have before the will, they should know the great benefit which mind has wrought. Why does she say that in explaining that biblical text? It doesn't seem to have any correlation to it. She wants to show here, what has that woman brought to the present age? That woman has brought the signs of mind healing. That is one of the signs of that woman. And so we really should know the great benefit that that woman has brought through the signs of mind healing. So there is no excuse that we can say, I didn't know. I didn't know about it. I didn't dream that something is possible. We cannot excuse us by saying we didn't know. We know. And that's the point where she picks it up and says, the woman must be aware, the womanhood sense is that which must hold fast to that which one knows, and not try to excuse oneself. Again, she said, they should also know the great delusion of mortal mind. Can you see now she shows the counterpart to it, and say they can't excuse themselves anymore and say, I didn't know how mortal mind acts, how secretly mortal mind operates. I'm absolutely surprised about all the occultism that goes on, and suddenly awake and see that I'm in a trap, that there is a whole web of mortal mind being spun, and now suddenly I wake up and see I'm right in the trap. You can't say that anymore. You know it. You have been introduced to Christian Science. You have seen the practice of it, you have seen the fruits of it, so you can no more say that you didn't know how mortal mind works. You know, the world at large today doesn't know what what mind is spinning, what goes on in the heads of the people who govern the world and try to rule the world. They don't know what kind of combination the politicians and the military people and the economic people are spinning. Most people don't know. Only usually when one reads then the memoirs after 50 years and says, oh, that was happening. Oh, that was going on. Think of the time of Hitler Germany. Nobody knew what's going on. Nobody was aware what's going on. Nobody could see that England was financing Hitler so that Hitler could hit back. These things go on with a great measure. Not these little, tiny, little fears and agonies and hatreds and jealousies that go on between two or three people. We have to think about the world, and we should know who knew at that time what was going on in those concentration camps. Now after 50 years, we see the Holocaust film, and then we say, oh, that was going on. Yes, that was going on. Nobody wanted to know it. And those who knew and told, and those who heard it, didn't believe it. You see? They said, no, that's not true. Those who could have averted it didn't believe it. They put it aside as rubbish. Do you think that is not going on today? Who knew here in this country that the atom bomb was built somewhere in, where is it, Colorado or? Huh? Who did know it? Not even the vice president knew it. Yeah. You know, we have to deal with the 6th and the beginning of the 7,000 year period, not with the 1st and 2nd 1,000 year period, not with those child plays. And Mrs. Eddy says, you can't say you didn't know. You know not the details of it, nothing of it, but you know how mortal mind works. And therefore, if you are a woman, you handle it. And there is no excuse, she wants to say. There's no excuse to say, I didn't know. There's no excuse for shutting one's eye. No excuse. Those who know science know the fundamentals of how the divine mind heals and also knows how mortal mind operates, both. Many are willing to open the eyes of the people to the power of good resident in divine mind. That's true. That's much easier. But they are not so willing to point out the evil in human thought and expose evil's hidden mental ways of accomplishing iniquity. That's the point. Only the woman can do that. Only the woman sense can do that. Because the woman sense knows the nothingness of evil. And the woman sense can substitute the operation of mortal mind with the operation of the divine mind. And does it. Why this backwardness, since exposure is necessary to ensure the avoidance of the evil? See how, as I said, in Hitler Germany, it didn't do a trick to expose evil. Nobody wants to believe evil. People like to believe good. But they don't like to believe mortal mind's activities. They only get in a state of indignation when they see evil happening. But that's too late. That's too late. Because people like you better when you tell them their virtues than when you tell them their vices. It requires the spirit of our Blessed Master. Can you see now why that is in the tone of love? It required the spirit of our Blessed Master to tell a man his faults, and so risk human displeasure for the sake of doing right and benefiting our race. It needs a lot of woman sense to tell somebody out of love for that somebody, where he goes off the track, where he's off the track. Because the other one takes it as criticism and hits back. It isn't criticism. The woman doesn't criticize. He helps the other fellow by pointing out where the other goes off the track. Who is telling mankind of the foe in ambush? You know, that is exactly, you see, what I told you about Mrs. Eddy when I told you what the students reproached her. That they say, you always criticize us, and we don't like it. But she didn't criticize them. She had a woman love for the student, and she could see that the student may not go the right way, may not be able to see where he has to change. And so the woman brings out the fault in the other one, not for criticism, but because he wants to help. But the other can take it as criticism and hit back. That's what, therefore, every pioneer goes through. You see, from your bigger experience and longer experience, through the experience one has made over and over and over, one gathers somehow a feeling. One can sniff the danger. Can you say that? One can sniff out the danger and can see, oh golly, here a student of mine or a friend of mine or so, oh gosh, that one doesn't see what he's doing. And it takes quite a bit to tell, because in 90%, you know, they will hit back. And then they break up. And then they think one is criticizing them, or one doesn't acknowledge them, or that one is short-sighted, or I don't know what. So, here it is. It is not criticism, it is mother love. Is the informer one who sees the foe? Well, Mrs. Eddy did see the foe. She had enough experience to see the foe in other students, or how they would fall into a trap or walk into a trap. If so, listen, be wise, escape from evil, and designate those as unfaithful stewards who have seen the danger and yet have given no warning. So one is always in that awkward situation that one says, well, if I point it out, in 9 cases out of 10, I will get it back full and plenty. And then one hesitates. And then suddenly one realizes, but there is also a sense of love which gives a cup of cold water without thinking, what do I get back? Even if I get the kicks back, okay, that's that. That doesn't hurt me. The main thing is that one is in line with the sense of love that always wants to help. Mrs. Eddy always wanted to help the students. She didn't want to tear down the students, but they didn't like it. And that is what everyone sees. Think of what John Dolly went through. Oh, if you would know all that, huh? And how they deserted him, how they adored him to the 10th degree, and one thing which they couldn't understand, and off they were. They ran like rats. And there are always about 9 out of 10 that ran, and one stays. But these are the good ones. They will do the job. Therefore, she summarizes the whole thing and says in the next paragraph about the armor of divinity. At all times, now you can see the all-embracing sense of love. It's always all and the utmost. At all times and under all circumstances, overcome evil with good. Can you hear the tone of love? Huh? The ever-present of ministering love. Know thyself, and God will supply the wisdom and the occasion for a victory over evil. Clad in the panoply of love. Yeah, in the sense of love. Human hatred cannot reach you. See, it all has always the same tone. It's always that same tone of Gethsemane, love that remains love even if it finds no response. It's always love that remains love even if you get a kickback. It's always the sense that actually if our love is big enough, and not even a kickback can come back, because it cannot flow inward when the floods of love are big enough. So she ends up and says, the cement of a higher humanity will unite all interests in the one divinity. And I think with this paragraph she makes a break, or this is more or less the end of the scriptural interpretation. The next paragraph is more or less giving a resume of Revelation, and shows that this picture of Revelation has nothing to do with the past, that it has to do with us, that we are the woman, that we can see in that 12th chapter our own picture, what happens within ourselves, that it has to do with us and not just with a biblical picture. So we can run through this very quickly. Through trope and metaphor, the revelator, immortal scribe of spirit and of true idealism, furnishes the mirror in which mortals may see their own image. So can you see what she does now? She says, I have presented you the 12th chapter. This is your image. It is nothing outside of you. It concerns you. Look into this mirror. You can be the woman. You can also be the dragon. In significant figures, he depicts the thoughts which he beholds in mortal mind. She makes it here impersonal and says, this is mortal mind's business. It isn't Mr. A and Mrs. B and Mr. C's business. It isn't a personal business. It's how mortal mind operates. We consider mortal mind. Thus he rebukes the conceit of sin and foreshadows its doom. So it gives a general sense, you know, everything that is wrong will find its own doom. We'll go down. With his spiritual strength, like Michael, he has opened wide the gates of glory and illumined the night of paganism with the sublime grandeur of divine science. Outshining sin, sorcery, lust, and hypocrisy. He takes away mitre and scepter. He takes away all the false sense of government, the government of religion and of government of kings, mitre and scepter. And enthrones, instead of people, he enthrones pure and undefiled religion and lifts on high only those who have washed their robes white through the two methods, namely through obedience, which is science, but also through suffering, the second method. Giving again a wonderful sense, you cannot escape salvation. In one way or the other, sooner or later, through signs of suffering, your robes will be washed white. There is not a way to salvation, and for the other one, a way into hell. There's only one way, and that way is into salvation. So at that point, more or less, he finishes the overall view of the 12th chapter of Revelation. Then tomorrow we'll take the next two paragraphs on this page 572 and see that here she recapitulates more or less the whole of Revelation, not only the 12th chapter, but actually all the visions up to this point, so that she finds a step into the next vision.